We'll commence with the May 22nd, 2009 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. On the heels of another successful Dayton Hamvention, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, with our first forum excerpt from the 2009 Hamvention. Riley is gone. No, not dead. He's been gone from the FCC for almost a year now. The commission finally found a replacement for him. Time will tell just how well she does. That's right, I said she. Laura Smith is the new Spectrum Enforcer. You'll notice an FCC-issued call sign is conspicuously missing. Does Miss Smith plan on becoming one of us? And what kind of background does she have that will help her be a tough enforcer on the ham bands? We'll find out this week as we bring you our first excerpt from the just-completed 2009 Dayton Hamvention. Over the next several weeks, we'll excerpt from the ever-popular FCC forum. Here is the first featuring Laura Smith.
There has been quite a lot of speculation about me, a lot of rumors. I have to admit, you guys gossip more than a group of 15-year-old girls. I've never seen anything quite like it. So I thought the best way to do this today was to give you a little bit of an introduction to me, who I am and what I'm about. The best way to tell you who I am and what I am about is to tell you a couple of stories. They're not stories about me, by the way. They are stories, however, about the person who has had and still does have the most influence on me in my life. That's my dad. And yes, the internet rumors are true. My father is a retired police officer. He spent 45 years carrying a gun and a badge. And during that time, he did manage to raise four children and teach us some values. Now, the best way for you to understand what kinds of values my dad taught us and those values that I'm going to bring to the job is to start out at the beginning of his career. He was a young cop. One day he got a call while he was at the desk. The complainant went through the litany of what had happened. Someone had gone through downtown, shot out all of the streetlights downtown. He took all of the details. They had a very detailed description of who the individual was. He wrote that down, and the complainant, who just so happened to be the mayor of the town, said, "Now, you know what you have to do." He said, "Yes, sir, I do." He got up from his desk. He got in his car. He went for a short drive. He got to a house. He went up. He rang the doorbell. A middle-aged man answered the door. "Well, hello there. How are you today?" "Sir, I need to speak to your son." "You do?" "Yes, sir, I do." "Well, what's this about?" So he handed the middle-aged gentleman the piece of paper. The middle-aged gentleman read the piece of paper. He said, "Do you want to take him with you or do you want me to bring him down?" He said, "I'll take him with me." The middle-aged gentleman turned around, said, "Bruce, put your shoes on. Your big brother is here to arrest you." That should give you a hint about what my dad was about. It did not matter who you were. If you did the crime, then you had to actually pay the price. To be fair to my uncle, he was 14 years old at the time, and it was a school prank that went awry, vastly awry. He spent the next 6 months working off that debt. He also ultimately became a judge, so there is some redemption here. That doesn't say much about the system there in Arizona, but I will say he is a fine judge and he's a great guy, so he did manage to grow up. You would think at that time my dad would have learned his lesson and tried to avoid confrontations like that. Unfortunately, let's go several years more into his career so you get a better idea of the man who actually taught me just about everything I know and who I am. He's in Tucson at this time. One evening he gets a call while he's in his car. There's a bar fight. They need someone to go break it up. They need someone big to go break it up. My dad's a big guy. So off he goes. He arrives at the bar fight, walks in the door, and sees the most famous man in America in the middle of a brawl. This man is attempting to pummel as hard as he can all of the people around him. At that point, my father said he had about 4 inches on him and about 30 pounds on him. So he knew that he had to do something to break this up without getting killed in the process, because if this man actually took a swing at him, he was going to annihilate him. So he went over to him and he interjected himself very quickly into the fight, and he said very, very sternly to this man, "Sir, you must stop immediately." This is a bar fight, right? That didn't work. He grabbed him by the arm and he said, "You must listen to me. We can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way, but we will do this. The easy way, you stop and come with me. The hard way," and at this point he put his hand on his gun and he said, "The hard way is I will use any and every means at my disposal to force you to come with me. If that means putting you on the ground, cuffing you, and perp walking you out of here, I will do so. And while I'm doing it, the bartender will drop the dime on you and call every press person in town, and they will be outside to take your picture. You will come with me." At that point, the man decided, very rightfully so, that he was going to cease and desist and come with the police officer. So out my father took him, and everything was peaceful, so you would think. That night, my dad went home and told the story to my mother. For the next 2 weeks, my father slept on the couch, because that night, my father arrested John Wayne. So as you can see, he's a man who really does hold true to his word. It doesn't matter who you are, what you do for a living. If you break the law, you have to pay the price. Unfortunately for some amateurs, they are now facing that with me. That's the philosophy that I've adopted. I was raised that way. If my old man would arrest not only my uncle, but John Wayne, what can I do? I have to follow through. Putting aside all of the levity here, let's talk about what I've been up to in enforcement in the last couple months. When Riley left, those that had the privilege of being in Riley's office knew that it was almost floor-to-ceiling papers. They were everywhere. The office had been emptied out, and everything was now electronic waiting for me. So I got in, and there were approximately 450 emails waiting in the FCC hand mailbox. I spent a couple of weeks sorting through those and ultimately discovered that some of those were repetitive complaints or multiple complainants, and there were about 303 complaints in there all totaled when everything was combined. I was thinking, well, that's not such a bad deal. I can deal with this. So I began compiling the list. During that process, however, the folks down in D.C. decided to ruin my entire day and send up about 125 more cases that they'd been hoarding down there. So all total, there were about 430 cases in the backlog. What I had to do was sort of categorize them, find out what they were, figure out what was going on, and then come up with some kind of plan of action. During this whole process, however, you all need to understand, when I took this job, it was changed. This job used to be in the Spectrum Enforcement Division down in D.C. It was a remote position in a D.C. office. It is no longer in that division. I am actually a field agent. I am attached to the FCC field offices. I am in the Northeast region, and my supervisor is the regional director for the Northeast region. So when we moved it, we had to actually move everything, meaning the databases and everything that went with that position. So we have created a new database in the field, and we're trying to populate that database. So on top of taking inventory of all the backlog, I have to, and still am, populating the new database so that we can keep a track of it, because the worst thing you can do is to lose track of what's going on. After I finished going through all of these, I came up with a list of about 7 or 8 different categories of what the complaints generally fall into. And the list is rather broad, meaning I sort of put big categories and then there are various scenarios under those categories. But for your purposes, we get a lot of things, complaints dealing with criminal investigations or criminals who have been convicted of crime. Those are handled on a case-by-case basis. We simply review the facts and the commission will act on that. That is not me who will act on that. That is actually a separate department at the commission that will ultimately act on what to do with those licenses. We also get technical violations, whether it's failure to identify, 113A4, out of band, those type of enforcement complaints come in. Those are relatively easy to deal with. If you have committed a technical violation of the rules, you get either a phone call, an email, or a letter from me that says, don't do that. If you continue to do it, you get something more from the commission that says, we told you not to do that, and you did it. So here's your warning letter. Don't do that again. If you feel that you cannot comply by that, we can certainly accommodate your wishes and raise it up to the next level, and you can get a notice of violation or a notice of apparent liability. To make our point, we'll take your money. Thank you very much. You can make the checks out to me. It actually doesn't work that way.
You're listening to a talk by the new ham radio enforcer, Laura Smith, who spoke to a packed forum room at the 2009 Dayton Hamvention on May 15th. We'll conclude our excerpt from her talk in a moment. This is the RAND Report, being subsidized by Merle Heinlein, KB9NOH. His bio will be found on QRZ.com. We'll be right back.
The third type of complaints that I get are harassment and language complaints. These are a little bit more difficult, and I'm sure you can all understand why they're more difficult. We're talking about Pete follows me around the air and gets on every time I'm on to interrupt my CUSO. Okay. Not much I can do about that, realistically, unless Pete is maliciously interfering with you, which we're going to get to in a minute. That's a great one. Or language. You all know that you need to not use foul language on air. You're going to do it. I tell you, I've been in restaurants and I've heard language that quite frankly, you have to sort of say, did you really say what I think you said in a restaurant full of people and children? In our society anymore, we've had a lot of influx of these types of conversations and words. So generally speaking, these are very difficult for the commission to enforce in the sense that if you use it in the routine course of a conversation, you're not going to get a notice of violation from the commission. If you use it as a systemic pattern and you are making sexual references and innuendos in your conversation, you're going to hear from the commission. Don't do it. Try to remember that not only can you hear you, but I get to hear you at some point, and I don't want to hear you when you want to talk like that. It must be the only woman in the United States whose husband says every day as she goes to work, there's my wife, she's going to listen to dirty tapes. Don't do it because I don't want to hear it. And really, I really don't want to have to close the door. You know what I do? I close the door of my office when I'm going to listen to him, and everybody around me in the office around me, they all like hover right outside. They're all like listening to see if they can hear what's going on in there. The other type that I get are the illegal use of call signs. There's virtually nothing I can do unless you know who is doing it. What you do is you tell me that it's happening. It's been happening quite often, by the way. You let me know it's happening, and I'll make a record of it. So if somebody were to break a rule while using your call sign, we do have a record that you've complained to the commission and said, I'm not using it. Somebody's pirated my call sign, essentially. If we catch them while doing it, and we do some routine monitoring, and if somebody catches it, one of the monitoring stations or a field agent, then we can do something. But other than that, really, unless it's, a pattern and they do it regularly, if it's a one-off, there's nothing I can do about it. But thank you for letting me know, and we will make a record. We get a lot of malicious interference complaints. That's actually the bulk of the complaints that I get. Unfortunately, these are a little bit more difficult to handle because malicious interference is a gray area, meaning what is it, what does it mean? And it's based on the facts of the case. So what I have to do is take the information from you and determine based on those facts, of those circumstances, at that given time, was that malicious interference? And if it was, again, we can do a phone call. If I think it's a one-time deal, we can do an email, or we can do some kind of letter. Remember, enforcement is all about facts. And when you give me the facts, then I can go forward and try and work out what we're going to do and how we're going to resolve the problem. The next type of complaint that we get are unlicensed use. I think a lot of you have seen a lot of letters that got posted. I get a lot of people emailing and calling about people who are either TVers operating in the amateur band or people who are flat out just operating in the amateur band. So we contact them and either talk to them or write them letters and tell them, don't do it. And again, if you feel that you can't abide by that, we will contact you again with a warning letter that says, don't do it. And if you continue to do it, we will, again, invite you to share some of your money with us, and we'll gladly take it into the U.S. Treasury. The last one that I get, which seems to be, on their face, the easiest to resolve and yet are ultimately going to be the most troublesome, are the RFI cases. I get two types of RFI complaints. The first type of RFI complaint I get are the ones where your neighbors are complaining about you. You guys are causing interference to their television or to their radios or their telephone. The commission generally tells them if you are a licensed amateur operator operating within the parameters of your license, then the Part 15 device that you are causing interference to is subject to that interference, and the rules state that very clearly. We suggest that they either work with you or they get a filter, and those are the two suggestions. The other type of RFI case, which I currently am working on, approximately 50 with the ARRL lab, are the RFI cases dealing with utility line interference. Now, this one is a little bit, technically, you would think it's easy to resolve. Power line is causing interference. Utility will come out and fix it. Everything will be fine. Not quite so easy. Those of you that have been experiencing it for 3, 4, 5, 10, 12 years know that that, in fact, is not what happened. What I am discovering, and we're trying to figure out a way to communicate better to the utilities, is that the utilities quite simply don't know how to fix the problem. They can't identify the noise. What they will do is they will go out and they will find 15 sources of noise. They will fix these 15 sources of noise, and then they will come back to me with this detailed list of these 15 sources of noise that they have fixed. Yay, we're all done. No, they haven't fixed your noise. So they don't quite understand the concept of don't just run out and fix everything you see. That's irrelevant to the amateur. The amateur wants you to fix their noise. First step, go to the amateur's house and listen to the noise so you can determine exactly what they're hearing. So when you fix it, you can ultimately figure out if you have, in fact, fixed their noise. I'm trying to figure out a way with the lab how we can best tell the utilities that they need to really think about how their processes work and what we can do to educate them so that they can get out and fix this. What I have done, which is slightly different than Riley, is that I have decided, in order to motivate the utilities to better try and resolve these situations, I have given them time limits. What I'm doing is telling them, if you go out and you can't fix it, then every 2 weeks you have to report back to me in writing why you can't fix it. Utilities are, generally speaking, publicly traded companies. So what happens is they have a board of directors that they answer to. Those people are not going to want them to waste time and energy writing this crazy woman in Gettysburg every 2 weeks a detailed report. And believe you me, if they miss their deadline, I call them and tell them, you've missed your deadline. I need your report. I have spoken to more heads of utilities in the last 3 weeks than I ever care to speak to again. They have no qualms about calling me and saying we can't meet the deadline. And I've explained to them, that's fine. I'll just write up this nice little letter. You can write your check to the federal government. What I have done thus far, though, is try and work systematically through this backlog to get to it. And I would say that in a perfect world, I would be two-thirds of the way through all of this. And in reality, I am two-thirds of the way through the backlog. Unfortunately, and I have to say I do love the amateurs, but unfortunately, you guys like to complain a lot. I get about 20 to 30 emails a day with new cases. So as fast as I'm working through those 400 cases that I had when I got there, I get new cases. The thing that I will tell everyone is if I don't respond to your email immediately, I am not ignoring you. Please do not think that you're not going to get a response. But again, I have to sort of try and work these as I can to get the backlog taken care of, to take care of what is now the new backlog that is building up. And eventually I will get it all done. Going forward, I will just suggest to all of you that we as a collective, you guys and me, we can have a great relationship. We can do this the easy way. You guys can, in fact, follow the rules and remember that when you signed up to become an amateur, you actually signed and committed to adhere to the commission's rules. I'm going to strongly suggest that you hold to that. If you don't, we can do this the difficult way. And I am more than willing to do that if it comes down to it, understanding that my preference is that we all just get along.
That was a talk by the new FCC amateur radio enforcer, Laura Smith, given at the just-completed 2009 Dayton-Hamvention during the FCC Forum. Next week, we'll bring you our second FCC Forum excerpt, this one from William Cross, W4TN. The RAIN report is copyright 1990-2009. RAIN. All rights reserved. We'll talk more about our experiences at the Hamvention when we have more time next week. For a very happy RAIN founder and producer, Hap Hawley, KC9RP, who is now plowing through many hours of audio from more than 40 Hamvention forums, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you all a very 73 from all of us at RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.